The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you as usual. Today, we're going to be talking about some things that are currently breaking. And this is a matter of national security. It's a matter of identity theft. It's a matter of cybersecurity. There's a number of different issues that we're going to be going into today. As you may have been reading, the Office of Personnel Management had a major hack, a major breach in terms of a number of different records, at least 4 million. We don't necessarily know if that is the actual number, but at the minimum of 4 million people have probably been impacted by someone breaking in and getting hacking into their systems. We're going to be talking about that today, but then also talking about the state of cybersecurity with our federal government, also the impact of that on the private sector and other places. How concerned do we need to be? What is going on right now, and how do we deal with these issues? We're talking to two experts on this. We're talking to the Honorable Charlie E. Allen. He is a senior intelligence advisor at the Intelligence and Security Alliance, Intelligence and National Security Alliance, INSA. But he's also one of the principals at the Chertoff Group. And he served a lot of time in the CIA and other areas working as intelligence and doing a number of different things. But he's an expert on this area. We also have on the line Terry Roberts. She is the president and founder of CyberSync Incorporated. But she was former deputy director of Naval Intelligence and did some time at Carnegie Mellon, the Software Engineering Institute. And she's also the co-chair of the Cyber Council at the Intelligence and National Security Alliance as well, INSA. And you can find INSA at insaonline.org. And you can look up all this information that they're doing in terms of the Cyber Council and everything else. Terry, Charlie, welcome.
Really? Thank you very much.
You know, let's talk about this OPM situation. I know you guys are right on top of it, looking at it. What's the nature of certain things right now? And even OPM just released something recently about kind of the OPM identity protection, about phishing campaigns that, you know, people may start getting, you know, being aware that people may be masquerading as OPM and trying to, you know, get any information from you and doing these phishing campaigns. Where are we with this situation now with OPM?
This is Charlie. We're in the early stages of deep investigation by the Office of Personnel Management and others supporting it, such as the Department of Homeland Security, the National Protective and Directorate under Suzanne Spaulding, who runs NPPD. So we're in the, and part of its DHS is to help respond and support government, civil agencies of government who have deep breaches like this. From a counterintelligence perspective, this has to be a very grave event because there has been personal identity information on people who have security clearances, who are in the process of getting those clearances, perhaps for the first time, or who are getting what we call periodic reinvestigation. And millions of current and former federal officials are getting notifications of this breach. I received my notification a week ago. So the ATP, or the Advanced Persistent Threat actor here, has a lot of data on Charlie Allen. But it's more important for those who are still active in government, who hold security clearances, or those seeking it. I'll let Terry talk a little bit about the phishing process and how it works.
Yes, so Charlie's framed very nicely the gamut of the kind of personal data that was taken. So what that means is that these actors can really become you online, right? They have your email information, they have some of your personal information, and so then they can send emails as you to someone else within government or outside of government. And so that is basically a masquerading online, which means that then they can try to come back into government to gain access within different networks across the U.S. government.
Wow. You know, when we look at this dynamic and people kind of masquerading and, you know, sending these emails out and also trying to get additional information. I mean, you know, 4 million different people and then trying to get additional information. What would that look like, Terry or Charlie? You know, I mean, when somebody, if for a government employee or a contractor or somebody looking at this right now, what would a masquerade email possibly look like? Would it be like, hey, you know, OPM is trying to get more information from you. We need you to go to this site and fill this out. What should we be looking for?
The first thing you always look for is there an attachment with the email? And so because you never want to open an attachment that's from an email address or from a person that you don't normally communicate with. So it's the coming from someone unusual, abnormal. Sometimes there's a slight twist in the IP address that looks a little bit suspect. So what you should immediately do is you make a, before you actually open any kind of an attachment or open any kind of email, there's a function on your computer. You can just make a copy of that and you can send it to your IT office or your cybersecurity office. So in other words, if there is anything suspect, immediately make a copy, forward it to your cybersecurity office, and put suspect email in the title. And then they can open it up in a safe place so that it doesn't necessarily come in. The difficulty here is if it is someone you normally communicate with, and if they are using the correct IP address, then the sense is just be very careful about any attachments.
You know, when you think about this and you kind of think about the dynamics of the attachments and all the other kind of pieces with it, really the advice is to slow down. A lot of times people get an email, they just jump right into it and then start filling out stuff without checking out either an IP address or other things like that. Part of this now is probably, you know, to slow things down, make sure you check things out or call about it. Or like you said, send it to, you know, U.S. CERT or the designated people rather than rushing and do that. Would you say that, Terry?
Absolutely. I think there are also new technologies that can be leveraged to up our game on online identity authentication. And so I think that's an important area to also be looking into.
And as we think of... Go ahead, Charlie.
I'd just like to add something in addition to the assuming someone's persona online and doing the phishing and continuing in very subtle ways. There is also a very serious issue relating to hostile or potentially hostile states getting a treasure trove of information from which they can then focus on individuals whom they might wish to recruit. If there is individuals that would suggest in the data that has been stolen some vulnerability and financial vulnerability or other vulnerabilities or family issues, we have states. The Cold War ended about 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed, but hostile states continue their espionage activities unabated against the United States and against its citizens. So classically, this is I think General Hayden of the Chertoff Group pointed out that this is really a treasure trove, that the hackers involved here is something that you surely wish to have in order to assess individuals, determine if you can find a vulnerability that you can exploit using access agents you've already recruited to get close to those individuals. So we have both the current and the cyber identity persona that is assumed, and you also have the classical intelligence problems of counterintelligence. And very candidly, the intelligence community and others have not put sufficient funding and resources into counterintelligence. I have long advocated this, and the intelligence community is doing a lot more in this area, but let it be said that whoever has this information can use it for multiple purposes.
Charlie, I want to talk about that when we come back, because, you know, that SF-86, that national security questionnaire, as you're kind of speaking of, where now the EQIP has been shut off. But that is a treasure trove of information on people, and that's a lot of personal information. I want to go into that and talk about counterintelligence and talk about what I don't think people completely understand about how valuable this can be to a state actor, whether it be China, Russia, or whoever the case is, in terms of exploiting some of our highest officials, possibly, or highest level contractors who have high level clearances within the U.S. government and know some of our best and most guarded secrets. We are talking about this OPM situation. We're talking about this kind of crisis, this cybersecurity situation where OPM has been breached. We're just starting to really understand what's going on right now with it. We're going to keep on talking about it. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Terry Roberts from CyberSync Incorporated, and we're talking to Charlie Allen from the Chertoff Group. Both of them are part of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Thank you for stopping by the show. We have been talking about this cybersecurity situation. We've been talking about the Office of Personnel Management being hacked. If you have not seen the news, this has been a really, really critical situation that really doesn't have any precedent. I mean, I don't think, we've had some banks who have lost information. We've had a number of different corporations who have been hacked. But in terms of the federal government, and the exposure of federal employees who have security clearances and other things like that, I don't think we've had any kind of situation like this before, and we are just starting to learn about it now. We're trying to get an understanding of it as we speak. We're talking to Charlie Allen. He's a principal at the Chertoff Group, and he is an expert on this area, have served in the CIA and other areas. We're talking to Terry Roberts. She's the founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. She served in Naval Intelligence. You know, as we look at this, Charlie and Terry, and we were talking about the impact of this, break down and so people can understand. I know all federal government people can understand, but those who are not necessarily federal employees, to really kind of get a sense of how we need to dedicate these resources. What is the exposure of a SF-86? What is that information that is being put out there that now these hackers have, either through an EQIP or whatever the case is? How bad is the exposure?
The amount of data is very detailed. It is essentially who you are, your life story, where you've worked, where you've lived, the various positions you've held, references, friends and colleagues, and their addresses. It is a very long form, which is about 30 parts to it, and is quite extensive. If the entire SF-86 EQIP, of course, is a way to update and upgrade your SF-86 because you have periodic reinvestigations, or you may want to have a higher security clearance, say from secret to top secret. So the data are quite extensive on you and who you are and where you've been and what you're currently doing. So I find that it doesn't tell everything about your persona, but the information gives a person wishing to target an individual or a set of individuals a great blueprint from which to proceed.
Terry, as you look at this from a cyber perspective and looking at kind of, taking somebody's identity, how important is this SF-86 in terms of maybe learning somebody's passwords or even, masquerading as somebody, because now you know certain parts of information that you can now disguise yourself as somebody and get into certain things?
Absolutely. So as Charlie laid out, it really is your life story, and it is key people within your life. So, in other words, as someone wants to masquerade as you, they have that insight into the kinds of relationships you have, and they can use that, whether they're trying to use it criminally or in an espionage or intelligence recruiting way that Charlie was talking about earlier. It's very powerful, and I know a lot of us have gone through the situation where, someone calls pretending to be you and asking for money from someone else, but it starts falling apart because they don't have all the details, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this kind of instance, they have the details.
Yeah, and with this, you know, and I encourage people to look at the SF-86 if you have never, ever experienced this, because this is what we're talking about the nature of information. I'm looking at one right now, 127 pages of just information, and the SF-86 has grown over years about, you know, what it's looking for, but everything from not only just financial history and other things, but if you've ever seen a mental health professional, if you've ever seen certain people, certain things that people would probably never tell anyone else if they didn't have to. That's the kind of information that's out there. Charlie, when you think about a counterintelligence dynamic and you working at the agency and everything else, is this the kind of information that people would be used to either blackmail them or expose them or try to, you know, say, listen, I know this about you, but you don't want people to know these things about you?
Potentially, it could be used for blackmail. The advance threat actors, however, will use it to do in-depth targeting, because it gives you potential areas where you might approach this person directly, but you're more likely to do it indirectly through other agents you've recruited at home or abroad. Or if you're traveling abroad, you might be approached, because people would agents of foreign powers would seem to be American. For example, and speak with American slang and language. So there's an infinite number of ways that you can be recruited. You can be recruited, as Terry pointed out, in very clever ways, perhaps online, unsuspectingly. And you certainly, as you travel globally, and are many people involved with clearances, whether they're contractors or government, they have to certainly be very much sensitive and aware of being approached, whether it's here or abroad. And their travel, of course, if you have a top secret clearance, you have to report your travel back to the person holding your clearance, the agency holding your clearance. There is some checks on it, but it seems to me that if I were sitting in Moscow or Beijing, I would have a lot of information on individuals, on whom to target, and I'd be very patient about it. This could be something that the information may not be used effectively for 5 or 10 years. Recruitments can take a long time.
That's kind of scary, that the fact that what you're saying, that this, they don't have to use it right now. This is not an immediate situation, that this can be waited out, and that somebody could use this 5 or 10 years down the road and pull some information back that that you probably forgot about or that you kind of thought was buried or things like that. You know, Charlie, you were talking about counterintelligence and that we're not investing enough in it. And especially as we deal with this kind of threat and we see this major threat, what were you saying when you were saying that dynamic, that we probably need to put more, resources and people onto the counterintelligence front?
Well, particularly since 9/11, we have put so much of our money into collection, analysis, and operations that our support functions, our critical lifeblood, such as security and counterintelligence, have always been, I think, underfunded. We did a study after the coast bombing, which occurred on 30 December 2009. It killed 7 CIA officers and wounded 8. A lot of that occurred because we were the victim of a double agent and we did not do enough counterintelligence work and evaluation. The agency has greatly upped its game in counterintelligence since, and in talking to the oversight committees, both are willing to put more dollars and resources into counterintelligence. We're on the right trajectory, but we cannot, again, learn that we have problems with someone like Bradley Manning or Edward Snowden or Aaron Alexis. We just can't afford those kind of events occurring again.
And, you know, for the layperson, Charlie, I just want to kind of maybe give them a quick education, because you've talked about the dynamic of you know, whether it be an Ames or Snowden or whoever the case is, you know, these kind of people who have been the people who are on the insider threat that we're dealing with. When we talk about counterintelligence, this is an education point, a quick education. What are we speaking about when we talk about counterintelligence?
We're talking about the whole of the person involved. In the past, it's been too much segregated into just looking at it from a security office perspective or from a counterintelligence perspective, you have to involve the whole individual. Human resources, when you recruit, you have government positions or contractor positions, you have to have a very end-to-end process where you involve the whole individual, because there were things we learned after the Manning, the Snowden, the Alexis events that should have alerted us to the fact that on Alexis, we didn't have all the records, the criminal records. Snowden had some behavioral aspects, but all the information wasn't fully shared within the intelligence community. Manning was able to download where we didn't have the proper security, layered security, and checks in place. But we can't continue to relearn these lessons. We need to be very proactive and very aggressive. I know that General Clapper, who's the director of national intelligence, and others are very, very proactive. So the lessons learned have to now be implemented and very proactive. I believe that in wake of what has happened over the last several years, we will have more money for security and more money for counterintelligence. But it's easier said than done when you're doing day-to-day global operations against al-Qaeda or extremist networks. And you also have to look at major powers like China and Russia, who are doing things that are unfriendly to U.S. policies, put it that way.
We've been talking about cybersecurity. We're talking about this OPM breach. We're talking about the damage that has been done by a hacking, and then that 4 million federal employees, possibly 4 million federal employees, and it may be more, even to the point that people who have applied to the federal government, people who have security clearances, a number of different people who have now possibly been exposed, and their records are now in the hands of a hacker. We're talking about this breach. We're talking about how to deal with it and a number of different things. And my guests today are Charlie Allen. He's a principal with the Chertoff Group, and Terry Roberts, she's the founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. They're both chairs of the Security Policy Reform Council and Cyber Council, of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We've been having an interesting conversation, important conversation about what's going on with cybersecurity, what's going on with this Office of Personnel Management hacking situation where a number of federal employees have been exposed. We're talking to two experts on the issues right now. We're talking to Charlie Allen. He's a principal at the Chertoff Group, and he is an expert on this area, have served in the CIA and other areas. We're talking to Terry Roberts. She's the founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. She served in Naval Intelligence. They're the chairs of the Security Policy Reform Council and Cyber Council at the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, INSA. You know, when we look at this and going into this OPM dynamic, OPM released a report, a cyber security report, and it talked about 23 different things that they are doing, kind of improving security in terms of restricted remote access, reviewing all connections, deploying anti-malware. I guess my question to both of you is shouldn't this have been the things that we were doing before, or are these new solutions, or where are we at on this?
Right. So if I may say on OPM's behalf, I don't think they should be held accountable for being the cybersecurity experts across the U.S. government.
Okay.
I think what this event points out is that we need more of an enterprise approach across all of government, leveraging the smartest agencies and entities and expertise and capabilities that we know are proven in some of the Defense Department and intelligence community architectures, and allow the civil side to be able to take advantage of some of those best practices and best technologies. So I really think this is an area where each individual government organization is not going to be able to be the best of breed in cybersecurity, but there can be an interagency approach that enables them to take advantage of that expertise, technologies, and approaches to raise the bar across government.
So what we're saying, though, Terry, go ahead, Charlie, before I say my comment.
No, I would support what Terry says. Not all agencies use OPM for its initial investigations or periodic reinvestigations. Some handle it on their own and their own responsibility. So it strikes me that a more enterprise-wide approach, I think there's where the Department of Homeland Security is helping and can help in the future with its efforts to work closely with all civil agencies, because agencies like Health and Human Services and others, the Center for Disease, CDC, there are people there that have clearances. So it has to be an enterprise-wide effort on the part of the government, on the part of the administration and the Congress. And this is something that should raise one above partisan politics. Not much gets there today, but when you look at the risks to U.S. national security, both parties should be joined at the hip in trying to resolve some of these problems, because they will occur unless we do some of the enterprise-wide efforts that Terry was just addressing.
You know, with this, there's been a concern about the number of cyber experts that we have in terms of personnel. What are we seeing? I mean, do we have the number of experts? And like you said, I'm guessing what I'm hearing is that every agency can't have the top cyber professionals. You know, there may not be enough, or maybe we need to decentralize some things. But is this a personnel issue?
We're sort of in a catch 22 right now, Derek, where we haven't been able across the United States and globally to train, educate, recruit, and retain the level of talent that we need in this area, because it really only came to the fore in the past decade.
Okay.
So we have to do it in a smart way where we partner effectively across academia, government, and industry continuously in this space, and that's why enterprise approaches have to be put in place. And so, to give you just an example, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a government clearinghouse for top-notch technologies and experts and approaches of proven approaches that then each government entity could access and tailor and transition to themselves, as opposed to being on their own to put in place an end-to-end state-of-the-art cybersecurity practice?
That would be powerful. You know, with that, I mean, where are we, Terry? Where are we, Charlie, in terms of the federal government? Are you, you know, you guys are talking, you guys have been government leaders. You guys are talking to government leaders. Are people now getting on that train right now in terms of saying we need to, you know, turn the page on this and create maybe these new partnerships? I know we've had InfraGuard. We've had a number of different kind of unique kind of partnerships. But where are we going with this?
Well, I think we're going in the right direction with the Defense Security Service, which is run by Colonel Stan Sims. They have made improvements on defense security, on contractor security. I believe that the impetus now given to the Office of Personnel Management, as well as to the Director of National Intelligence, because he has responsibility for protecting sources and methods, and we certainly have lost both in recent years, and he understands it, and it's very, very painful. We are on the right course, but we have a long way to go. We have a very large cleared contractor force, which must be included, not just government employees with the security clearances. There are large numbers of contractors with very sensitive securities. Large corporations can have an end-to-end counterintelligence and security programs. Smaller firms, which we need and need the innovation in smaller firms, cannot necessarily afford this. So this is going to take time, and it's complex. But I would hope we now have the impetus to help secure our country, so that the American public, which, like you say, does not understand all the intricacies of this, can have confidence that both in the government and both in the public sector and the private sector, that we're moving the right way to protect sensitive information that really affect long-term our U.S. national security.
And as I'm thinking,
now, if I could build on one thing that Charlie said is, as we're putting this, as we're regrouping after this really huge event, it's also about risk management. Since we can't do it all immediately, we need to protect the jewels. And the OPM personnel database was one of those jewels. So as we prioritize our limited resources, that's what we should be focused on first. Things that impact our people and our security planning and operations, those things need to be protected immediately.
You know, I wanted to tell do people understand that this was a jewel before this happened, though? You know, I mean, was this a situation that now you realize that you don't realize what you have until something happens? You're like, wow, this is so important. Do we have a number of those different things in federal government that we don't realize how important the data is, or that we have these things until somebody breaches it and uses it the wrong way?
Well, there's unfortunately a tendency toward that. Snowden gave away very critical U.S. capabilities, accesses, and particularly methodologies for achieving those accesses. And we're still recovering from that. It's going to take great effort to recover and significant cost. You're absolutely right. And Terry's right. The crown jewels. This is a crown jewel that should have been protected, both in perimeter defenses and also on the networks themselves, so that we will see the malware immediately and kick it off the network. We have to have those kind of capabilities. But there needs to be a broader look from the Congress and the administration at what are the crown jewels that need to be protected. We cannot always be in a recovery mode. We have to be in that proactive, offensive mode to stop this kind of loss that is detrimental to every American.
So a normal risk management approach is to do a bottom line assessment, agency by agency, entity by entity, to know what your mission is, what your crown jewels are, and what capabilities you have in place today so that you can figure out where to most effectively spend your next dollar to protect what is most critical.
Have either one, we got to take a quick break in a second, but have either one of you found that this is being proactively done in the federal government when you spent your time there, or do you think that is now a new conversation?
So it is being done, but it's being done by certain entities, okay, right, who happen to have a lot of expertise in this area, as opposed to being done across the interagency consistently.
Gotcha.
To me, without a cyber baseline, then anything that you're spending money on or focused on, like OPM's list, is that the right list? What is that based on? That's just based on, hey, these are all the things that we could do.
Right.
As opposed to a prioritization based on that particular government entity and what they do and what they need to protect.
Take a quick break. We're going to be coming back and talking about this. As on our last segment, we're going to continue to talk about solutions to this situation. We know that the problem, we know that it's there. We know that our government agencies have been hacked, and we know they will continue to be targeted by a number of state actors, by maybe the kid in the basement, by terrorist organizations or whoever trying to get sensitive information about what's going on, whether it be a federal employee or whether it be information about weapon systems or whatever the case is. But these are all sensitive information that needs to be protected, our crown jewels, as Terry says. We're talking about these things right now, and we're talking about two experts who have been really in the fray of this right now, who have been working on this. Charlie Allen, the principal at the Chertoff Group, and then Terry Roberts, who's the founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. They're the chairs of the Security Policy Reform Council and Cyber Council at the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about cybersecurity. We've been talking about such a critical issue about the hacking of 4 million records, employee records from OPM, the Office of Personnel Management. We're talking about how serious this is in terms of the exposure of a number of different people within the federal government and this kind of cyber, I'm hesitant to say cybersecurity crisis, but it is a very, very important situation that we need to deal with. It's not only affecting our banking institutions, it's not only affecting just identity theft, but it's also now definitely without question impacting our national security as people are being exposed who have some of the crown jewels. These are some of the people who understand our national security at the highest levels, whose information may be in the hands of some of our enemies right now. We've been talking about these issues with two experts. We've been talking to Charlie Allen. He's the principal of the Chertoff Group, and Terry Roberts. She's the founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. They're the chairs of the Security Policy Reform Council and Cyber Council. And they're at INSA. They do this for INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. And you can find that at INSA. INSAOnline.org. Is that right? Am I telling that right? INSAOnline.org. You can find the website, INSAOnline.org. They've got a number of good things on there, a number of different publications you can read, focus in on these issues. You know, when we look at this, Charlie, Terry, and we look at the dynamic, and you mentioned something really, really kind of telling, Terry, when you were kind of saying, is it the right list? You know, that kind of touched me. You know, are we doing the right risk management? You know, sometimes when we do these responses, people throw out a whole bunch of quick solutions and say, this is what we're going to do. But the question is it the right thing that you're doing? Are you really, really kind of, you know, going in? Have you done the real risk assessment? Because sometimes it's impossible to do that within days to take a look at certain things. One thing that struck me, I talk about modernizing systems and investing in more of a modern network and stabilization. From you guys' experience within the government, are our systems outdated? You know, we know we're having a hard time getting the right kind of personnel, the cybersecurity experts. Are the systems also outdated within government?
It is clear to me that some agencies are very outdated. They need new both perimeter and internal layered security that they must expend the dollars to get this done.
Yes, unfortunately, in the cyber arena, when your hardware and software is legacy or very old, then basically it's like an old lock. You know, the criminals know how to pick that lock very easily because they know it. So when you have old systems and old software, then basically your back doors are open. And so you are a hundredfold more vulnerable to exploitation and attack.
Wow. How, you know, the precedent of agency taking like Equip down, a major system and everything else that's now kind of taken offline. What's your thoughts on, what's the precedent on that in terms of taking such a big piece? Because it seems to me that's going to have an impact on security clearances. We already have a process that has been made longer now. I mean, you know, it got shorter for a minute, but it seemed that it's a process of starting to get a little bit longer, especially after Snowden and other things like that. What is this? What's the implications of doing something like that?
I think the implications of that are serious because there will be a tendency, the bureaucracy, to slow the process further, to take longer on investigations, to do less risk management because we have to have diversity in their workforce who have security clearances, and a penchant to sit on adjudication. Everyone's adjudicated or re-adjudicated if you're being updated to make sure they've looked at every aspect to ensure that this woman, this man, is eligible for a sensitive security clearance. So that will be the default response. Cannot be to slow down the processes. We know, and Terry knows, that we have new ways, new technologies. The Security Policy Council has advocated for certain changes to make the system a lot more expedited, use new technologies and investigative processes. We cannot afford to fall back on just more of the same. That is always has been historically the response of government, is to hunker down. This would be the worst thing we could do. We've got to be proactive, and we've got to look at people who have security clearances and people that don't. There are a lot of people in corporate America who may have a strong national security sector where we have thousands of contractors working with classified events. But the corporations are responsible for all their employees, whether they hold security or not. Also, the theft, and you alluded to it, the theft of our technology, particularly our defense technology, has been enormous, and upstream research and development, enormous. So this should be a time of real proactive work, not just sitting and reflecting and falling back on old techniques and procedures. We can't be that way.
So that's a beautiful segue to I focus on, with a lot of other folks, on how we can skip echelon to that next generation of key technologies and approaches so that we're not just iterating, but we're actually moving generations forward. And in one instance is our online authentication of our identities. So this is an area where there's some phenomenal new technologies, startups, and work that we could take our normal identity card, government identity card online approach, add biometrics, encrypt the information, add a fingerprint, and absolutely know end-to-end who you're dealing with online and who's at the other end. Another new exciting technology is about, for instance, with all the OPM data, it can tag all that data, it can categorize it according to its sensitivity, and it can encrypt it and put it in data lockers, and you can pull it out only when you need that piece of information for that particular function, as opposed to having all of that data on that one person open to whomever hacks into that system.
You know, we talk about these kind of new technologies and a number of different things right now. It seems as if these partnerships with these kind of new and maybe startup companies and everything else is becoming more and more critical. I guess the question of it is that a lot of times with these new kind of startup companies, with these new innovative people, these new ideas, these are people who are not always cleared. These are some of the people who are developing new ideas. And now we're kind of back. You know, how do we deal with a situation where some of our geniuses who are developing certain things are not always cleared? Now we've got a security system process that's now taking longer, as Charlie was talking about. How do we deal with all of that with this current state of constant changing technology?
Part of this is not only actively encouraging them to come to the federal government and to seek security clearances, but use new technologies, new ways of getting through the security process. And then what is occurring today, of course, is the Director of National Intelligence has instituted pilot programs and moving ahead on continuous evaluation, continuous monitoring, so that your work, the work you do, not everything is monitored, but all your work is monitored so that you can have that continuous view of a person. And if he or she is outside their profile for access to sensitive information, then questions are raised. Rick, if we had continuous evaluation, continuous monitoring, we would have found Rick Ames in a hurry because he rummaged around in areas for which he had no responsibility in CIA networks.
Yeah. So, Derek, go ahead, the beauty is there are some of the mechanisms in place to do exactly what you're talking about, but they just aren't being allowed to scale. So we have the federally funded research and development centers, like my old office at Carnegie Mellon SEI, at Lincoln Labs, at Penn State Labs. We have the national labs. So the mechanisms are there for them to outreach, to reach out to startups and innovative companies who don't have the clearances and don't have the accesses, and be that interlocutor, between that trusted third-party nonprofit agent between government and commercial startups. So it's there, but it's not being focused on enough, and it's not scaling.
you know, we got to close it out. But one quick thing I wanted to ask in maybe a few seconds, are the young people, do they know the people who are thinking about cyber and everything else? Do they know the ramifications of cybersecurity and that we need to get them involved? Do we need to get that new talent through the STEM programs? Is enough being done to get a new generation involved in government and solving these issues?
I'll let Terry answer, but my experience with millennials has been very positive. Okay. They do understand. They understand the need for new technologies and new ways of doing business, and they expect if they come in and get security clearances, they can operate in the 21st century rather than the 20th century. Terry?
They are open to everything. I think training that has to be done and is being done in a lot of areas across government and industry is digital literacy. So it's really about taking that technical savvy and smarts and then understanding where they're working and then what are the protocols and approaches that they need to put in place so that they're most effective at their job, but that they're doing it with a security background, which enables them in every direction.
We've been talking to Charlie Allen. He's the principal of the Chertoff Group, and Terry Roberts, founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated. They are the chairs of the Cyber Policy Reform Council and Cyber Council at the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. Without question, we're going to have you back because this is an important issue that we got to stay on top of. And really, rather than being reactive, we want to be proactive with this issue. No more times where we are just kind of now having a quick response because something happened, but we want to do that risk management. We want to do the things in terms of counterintelligence to, you know, find these insider threats even before they even get into the government in order to make sure that we keep our government safe and sound and keep our nation secure. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.